Y'all remember that fateful day in 1958 when the U.S. government sent a nuclear bomb to the moon as a show of global force? Wait, you don't remember that? Well, that's because it never happened. But the idea of nuking the moon was considered by the U.S. military back in the 1950s. It's just one of many unusual plans the U.S. military and intelligence agencies have considered over the years. Plans like training cats to spy on Soviet officials or unleashing glow-in-the-dark foxes in Japan during World War II. Our next guest shares some of these plans and why they were ultimately abandoned. Vince Houghton is a historian and curator for the International Spy Museum. He's the author of the new book, Nuking the Moon and Other Intelligence Schemes and Plots Left on the Drawing Board. Vince, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I really appreciate you guys having me.
When people talk about intelligence history, military history, they often focus on the things that did happen. What led you down this path for these plans that didn't quite make it off the table?
Well, I think it's not just intelligence and military history. I mean, I think history is just full of books about things that happened. I mean, that's kind of a truism. And I set out to say, you know what? Let's write a book about things that didn't happen. And a lot of it was I kept running into these stories doing research for another book. And they just were so good. They're just so wonderful. And it felt almost like the stories had to be told regardless if they had an ending or not that made us kind of feel good about ourselves. And as I was doing the research, I started realizing that it didn't really matter if these things happened or not, because historically, understanding the intent of some of these very important historical figures was just as important as if these things actually went through. So it helps us to understand a lot about the people at the time. I'm always someone who argues for being empathetic about people in our history. That's the way we can learn from history. And there's no better way than kind of getting inside the heads of people when they're making ridiculous decisions based on fear and desperation.
And that's a key point. You say there are two ingredients in a lot of these plans that now sound really wild. Desperation, you just mentioned, and innovation. What happens when we bring those two ingredients together?
Yeah, well, trouble. I mean, I think that in 2019, we look back at these plans and we kind of laugh at them because they're ridiculous. But if you put ourselves in the shoes of the people at the time, we can understand a little bit better why these ideas came up, because this is the Cold War. This is World War II, where we truly had an existential threat. And I think that word gets overused and bandied about, but a threat to our existence that we just don't really appreciate as much today. And so when you put together that desperation with very creative people, scientific geniuses, we're talking like Carl Sagan here, then you're going to get some really wacky ideas. And that's really what this book is all about.
Now, there are some things that everybody's going to, I think, key in on here. The nuking the moon idea, the cats we might get to, the spy cats. Here's the one that struck me. I'll go here on a selfish level. This is World War II, desperate time, war with Japan in the Pacific. And the idea comes to unleash foxes that have been painted in glow-in-the-dark paint.
Right, yeah. So
what?
Well, this is, I mean, anyone who studied a little bit of World War II will remember how racist America was toward the Japanese. And part of this was believing that they were not necessarily subhuman, but at least not as advanced as we were. And so the belief, the ridiculous belief at the time, was that they were extra superstitious, that the Japanese would be cowed by mystic and religion and stuff. So the idea was, let's tap into this, use psychological operations to freak the Japanese out. And part of the Shinto religion with the vast majority of the Japanese are foxes. And foxes tend to be kind of evil spirits in Shintoism. And so if you could paint them with glow-in-the-dark spray paint and then drop them into Japan ahead of the Marines, then the belief was that the Japanese soldier, who wasn't afraid of dying at the hands of the Marine, may be frightened away by a glow-in-the-dark fox and run away and surrender instead of fight. There's a lot of problems with this. One of them being the kind of ethnocentrism of the idea in itself, but at a more practical level, is you actually have to insert these foxes onto these islands the same way the Marines did. That's in the water. And although in the 1940s we did have a way to make glow-in-the-dark paint, we didn't have a way to make waterproof glow-in-the-dark paint. And that's one real hiccup that came along. And it took all the way to General Douglas MacArthur to say, hey, what happens when all the paint washes off? No one underneath MacArthur, five-star general, decided to say, hey, maybe this idea won't work out great because of the whole water thing involved in it.
Did we get to the stage of actually painting the foxes here?
Well, we did a full blown test in Central Park in New York City, and we dropped glow in the dark foxes, no warning whatsoever to the poor New Yorkers, and it had the intended effect. There were New Yorkers running, screaming for the exits because of these spirit foxes running around the park. And there's a wonderful newspaper story the next day about them running, using very 1940s terminology, like running out of the park like screaming genies, whatever that is. But it seemed to work enough that the U.S. government thought it had a winner on its side.
Well, it's a good thing then that the enemy didn't come up with this plan, because it worked on New Yorkers.
Right, yeah. No, and I mean, if you think about New Yorkers, who every single day deal with sewer rats the size of dogs, these foxes must have been terrifying to make New Yorkers run screaming.
We are talking to Vince Houghton from the International Spy Museum. You can hear him, by the way, on their podcast. It's called Spycast. His new book is called Nuking the Moon and Other Intelligence Schemes and Military Plots Left on the Drawing Board. Let's go, if you don't mind me spoiling the title one a little bit, the plan to blow up a nuclear weapon on the moon.
And this is one where it really exemplifies the concept of what the hell were they thinking from a 2019 perspective, but in 1958 and 59, understanding it completely. This comes right after Sputnik, where the United States and the West is terrified that the Soviets not only have built a rocket that could launch intercontinental ballistic missiles, because that's really what Sputnik is launched in space on, but also that they've demonstrated to the Third World, which is the battleground of the Cold War, that they have outdone us in science and technology. They beat us into space. And so the United States Air Force decided it needed a show of force that would at one time show the whole world that we were the big kids on the block. And the idea was, let's detonate a multi-megaton thermonuclear weapon on the moon. Now, you might assume that there was some tinfoil hat wearing scientist at the bottom of the Pentagon who concocted this plan. Actually, is a guy named Leonard Riefel, who's not a household name, but he later on becomes the deputy director of the Apollo program. So this is a real scientist who studied with Enrico Fermi at the University of Chicago, who later on would create the
thing on the football games where they draw the thing. He invented
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not sure why I can't think of the name of
Telestrator?
It right now.
Something like that.
Telestrator. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, so for weathermen and for sports. So this is a real scientist. And he actually brought on a geologist named Gerard Kuiper, who you may have heard of the Kuiper Belt, mm-hmm. which is on the outskirts of the solar system. And Kuiper and Riefel had no intention of doing the math that was necessary to do this, because they were full professors. And as you know, professors don't do math. They brought on the young grad student, and this grad student's name was Carl Sagan. So these are some of the most prominent and successful scientists of the 20th century that were going through this idea about detonating a nuke on the moon. And of course, it doesn't happen. And the wonderful thing about intelligence history is that we don't always have all the answers, because documents sometimes don't exist anymore, or they're heavily redacted, or they're still classified. And so there's no real great reason for why this program was canceled, at least as far as I am satisfied seeing.
Right. There are people say, well, we think it might have been they're worried about, you know, radiation or this or that. But there was never a we're killing this program because of this that we can find.
Well, certainly there's no smoking gun or smoking nuke that says that we're going to stop this program because we probably shouldn't detonate a multi-megaton thermal nuclear weapon on the moon. Not a single person seemed to say that. And really what I think it is, if you remember, if you've watched any of the early footage of the American space program in 1960, 1961, so we're talking about 2 or 3 years from this time, of all the rockets exploding on a launch pad, or flying up maybe 20 yards before they turn around and come back down, or turning sideways and going out into the ocean. That's with no people on there. That's with no payload. But imagine a 5-megaton nuke on top of one of those. That would be really problematic if one takes off for the moon and lands instead in Miami or Albuquerque or anywhere, or Madison, Wisconsin, just because we are so behind in our ability to put rockets into space. That's probably why the Air Force decided this was not a good idea.
Let's spend our last couple of minutes on another Cold War story, the Spy Cats.
Yeah, so this is a program called Acoustic Kitty, and I'm not making that up. That was the actual CIA code name. So someone at CIA had a sense of humor in the 1960s, and this was relatively genius. The idea was cats Stray cats are around the world in major cities. The Istanbul is a great example. There's stray cats everywhere. And no one pays them a lot of attention. Or if you do, you'll love cats. You'll scratch them behind the ear. You know, you'll pet them a little bit. But you won't stop your conversation when a stray cat walks in front of you. And we decided, what if we could get a covert listening device inside one of these stray cats? And I don't mean just kind of put it on a collar around its neck. The idea and what we actually did was take a cat and bring it to a veterinary suite and surgically implant a listening device inside the cat. The power pack in its abdomen, the antenna up into its tail, and the microphone up into its ear canal so the ears could actually filter the audio coming in from whatever conversation we're trying to figure out. And what the amazing part is, the technology worked. The cat, when it was all sewn up and woken up, it actually could do its job. It was a walking listening device that was created by CIA. Now, the trouble, of course, is you got to train your cat to be an effective listening device. And I think anyone who's been around cats for 30 seconds, that's where the plan starts to fall apart. And you can probably sense that's where CIA probably should have seen that coming. And so the most popular realistic story behind Acoustic Kitty is that they were unable to train it, and so they canceled the program. But there's another version that Acoustic Kitty was happening at the same time as another CIA program called MKUltra. And MKUltra was a mind control program that a lot of people know because the LSD work that was done during this time, but it was much broader than that. And part of it was trying to figure out, can we control the minds of animals using electronic stimulation? And so the Acoustic Kitty story was that they couldn't train it, so they went back in and they rewired the cat's brain. They got rid of the instinct to get hungry, got rid of the instinct to kind of wander off and lick itself, and turned it into an actually controllable animal. At which point they brought it out to do a full field test of Acoustic Kitty. And that's where tragedy struck. And I can give away the end of the story, but it's absolutely exactly what you expect to happen. They brought it to Washington, D.C. on the streets. They were going to test it. They put it down on the street, hit their spy button, and it ran off in the direction of two guys sitting on a bench, got halfway across the street, and got run over by a taxi cab.
We'll leave it there, Vince. Thanks for sharing these stories with us today.
Of course.
That's Vince Houghton. His new book is called Nuking the Moon and Other Intelligence Schemes and Plots Left on the Drawing Board. He's with the International Spy Museum.